Kevin, and the next topic is very much related, so we'll move right into it and use that as a trigger to get into the broader conversation. So without taking too much time, our last speaker, Bettina Von Hagen from EcoTrust in Portland, has been one of the leaders in Portland and Oregon in terms of the sustainability movement there, and I'm not going to take up more time with a long introduction, but she can give you a little more detail about what she does at EcoTrust and what her job is. So welcome.
Well, hello, everybody. So I wanted to talk a little bit, continue this discussion about ecosystem services, and just to tell you a little bit about EcoTrust and about me. I think both EcoTrust and I are very compelled by this idea of how do you bring the energy of private markets and the capital of private markets to benefit both conservation and social goals. So I'm sort of in this field of conservation finance, of how you accomplish these goals, but really on the private dollar rather than the public dollar, because the private dollar is considerably ampler than the public dollar in most cases. So part of the topic here is really how do you capture the energy of private markets to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish in the public good arena. So what I'd like to talk a little bit about is, first of all, the importance of ecosystem services, and Kevin really laid the groundwork on that, so I think we have a pretty good foundation for that already. And to talk about ecosystem service markets in the context of carbon for just a moment, because it's one of the most advanced ecosystem service markets, just to introduce you to the structure of how these markets are functioning for a later conversation about how markets might function in the context of green building. And then also to lead you just through a very short example of how ecosystem service markets have been used in the context of forestry in the Pacific Northwest to accomplish the objective that really Kevin laid out in his last slide, which is how do you as a forest manager and ultimately as a green building developer, if that's a conversation, how do you generate both private and public benefits and find ways to get compensated for those so you can find that sweet spot of generating both the commodities and services we need, and also those ecosystem services. So, here you have a list of, yet another list of ecosystem services, which I think at this point you're fairly familiar with. And I think the point about ecosystem services is that we all love them, but without any price set to them, we're over-consuming them. And this is a quote from Richard Sandor, who's the founder of the Chicago Climate Exchange, about what happens generally when things are free. And I know I have this problem at a all-you-can-eat buffet, and I'm imagining perhaps most of you do as well, unless you have considerably more self-restraint and discipline than I do. So that's the basic problem. The other thing I just wanted to highlight about ecosystem services is that they're worth a lot of money. Kevin, I think, gave an excellent example about pollination and what pollination services are worth and what you have to pay for them if they're not being provided by ecosystems. This is a study that Robert Costanza and a number of scientists did now over a decade ago of trying to sort of evaluate what is the economic value of ecosystem services on a global scale. And you can see there total value of ecosystem services of $33.3 trillion U.S. dollars, and he does a comparison to gross national product. And don't want to bore you with the details. I just want you to be impressed that it's a big number. And that I think has a importance as we think about these markets and how we might create value in them. So to that point again, just in terms of it's a big number, now let's look at carbon specifically. And again, I'm just trying to emphasize that these markets that you've been hearing about sort of in theoretical terms are happening, and particularly in the case of carbon. What this is looking at is just the value of the EU, the European Union ETS trading system that's come in existence just in the last 5 years to comply with Kyoto. And that market has been in the range of $30 billion and climbing fairly steadily, and that's just the EU compliance portion of that. And the number that really blows you away is when you start thinking about the U.S., and the estimates are about the U.S. carbon trading system of $1 trillion over the next 10 years we might be seeing in trading volumes. And that is a seriously big number. And the thing that really got my attention is when it was characterized, just to put that into context, it's the largest distribution of property rights since the settlement of the West. And so you can start imagining the type of economic redistribution that's at play with carbon, much less starting to talk about the other ecosystem services like water, which some people think will be even bigger than carbon. So, I think just to really impress upon you that the numbers are theoretically big, and the numbers are also, there's evidence that the numbers are also beginning to be practically big as these markets start being being explored. So, you know, we hear a lot about ecosystem service markets, and it all feels sometimes a little bit theoretical except for carbon. But just a note that ecosystem service markets actually have been around for, you know, probably a couple decades at this point. Kevin mentioned wetland banking, which is probably about a couple, you know, about 20 years of history at this point. And he talked a little bit about how those markets function. But there's also been a rich market in SOX and NOx trading. That's sulfur and nitrous oxides. Which is really sort of the precursor to a lot of these carbon markets in an attempt to reduce those pollutants. And also transferable fishing quotas. A lot of fisheries that are experiencing conservation issues have been capped. There's a total allowable catch that's set every year. And then there's quota shares that are established underneath that cap. Those quota shares are being traded among fishermen. That's another example of an ecosystem service market. At EcoTrust, we're beginning to play with a whole bunch of different markets. We're beginning to think about markets in bycatch. So bycatch is when you're fishing and you're catching non-desired species, and usually they're thrown back because they're not the species of choice. You can regard bycatch as a pollutant, if you like, and start putting caps on bycatch and think about trading systems for bycatch. So any time that you have either a good that you're trying to create, like habitat, or a bad that you're trying to reduce, like greenhouse gas emissions, is an opportunity to create a market as a mechanism for either reducing the bad or increasing the good in the most economically efficient way. So just to talk a little bit about the structure of an ecosystem service market. These are components that you will almost always see in a market, as you typically have some type of an enabling legislation. For example, in the case of carbon, it would be the Kyoto Protocol. What we're seeing in our region right now is a Western Climate Initiative in the process of forming cap and trade rules. So you have some type of enabling legislation that sets either the cap or the floor, depending on if it's a good or a bad that's being created, but some level. And for example, in the case of Kyoto, it would be some amount of greenhouse gas emissions relative to a 1990 baseline. You also have an entity that's regulated. In the case of WCI, it's under big discussion right now as to which sectors will be regulated. Certainly utilities, transportation looks like it's out. But, you know, which emitters will be in or out, is part of that negotiated process when you're establishing a market. Who the supplying entity will be that's allowed to provide offsets into that system. The rich discussion in WCI right now, for example, is will forests be allowed to participate as a source of offsets into the system? Yes, no. Issues on both sides of that. You know, how the allowances will be distributed. Will they be distributed free to polluters? Will they be auctioned? Big policy and shifts of wealth as a function of that decision. What will the service area be? In the case of carbon, you're dealing with a global resource. In the case of wetlands, generally, the service area, is the watershed. What the unit of trade is, metric ton of carbon dioxide equivalent in the case of a carbon market. So you have to establish what that unit of trade is going to be, what the trading platform is going to be, how it's going to be enforced, who's going to verify it, what the inventory methods are. So this is all what sort of goes into thinking about how you're going to design a market, and each one of those steps obviously has policy implications, and there are winners and losers that result from that. So it's a negotiated process. But the net objective of establishing this structure is to try to achieve the goal, the cap or the floor, at the least cost possible. So I'm going to just breeze through this so we can get to really the discussion I'd like to get to about what this means for green building markets. Just an example, if you need one, of sort of what happens in the presence of ecosystem service markets. This is a watershed in Australia. There's a left and a right part to this watershed. What you see on the, on your right-hand side of the slide is you see a degraded watershed. There's been a lot of deforestation. You have a lot of rise of salinity in this particular Australian context. We have contamination of surface water, by the increased salinity that's resulting from the deforestation. And then you have on the right side of the slide, you have sort of what happens in the presence of ecosystem service markets. So look at this degraded watershed and imagine that you've got markets for carbon, you've got markets for salinity credits, and you have markets for, I guess bioenergy would be the other one in this example. And so in the presence of those ecosystem service markets, you can produce both the commodities you were producing before, but in this example, because there are carbon markets, you have the Forest Service that goes in and plants trees up in the headlands, reduces the salinity level as a consequence of the trees absorbing more water. You improve water quality downstream. You get payments from the agricultural users who are benefiting from the water quality. You get carbon credits associated with the tree growth, and you've basically created the mechanism to restore a watershed. And the net result of that is you have a watershed that is producing greater revenue in terms of the goods and services and is also resulting in a healthier ecosystem and all of the social and conservation benefits associated with it. So the general premise is that in the presence of ecosystem service markets, you have more choices. As Kevin mentioned, I like his idea of the public sacrifice or the public benefit, depending on your choices. You've created a situation where if you create a public benefit through reforestation, you also get a piece of the you get a piece of the action from people who are benefiting from that ecosystem service improvement. So just quickly an example of how this is applied in forests, and then we'll get to an example of how it could be applied in a green building context. So EcoTrust launched a private equity forest land investment fund about 5 years ago, premised on this notion that managing forests for both the production of timber, in other words, the private benefit, and for the production of ecosystem services that we could monetize was a better way to manage forests than just trying to maximize timber production, which has all of these consequences that all of us have observed on our landscape. And this year contrasts those two styles of forest management, the industrial approach where you're just extracting fiber and the ecological approach where you're managing for a diversity of species and you're managing for the production of ecosystem services as well as for high-quality timber. And so we created a fund. We've purchased four properties in Washington and Oregon, about 12,000 acres, and actively managing them for the production of high-quality timber, for carbon, and for job generation. And a couple views of what our forest management looks like relative to the neighbors. And the only point here is as you are managing for sort of continuous cover forestry, you retain a lot of options and a lot of values on the landscape that you don't maintain if you're just managing for fiber production. And this is really the punchline, which is that, the punchline is that if you're managing for ecosystem service production and markets exist for that, and at the same time you're producing commodities that are valuable, but you're finding that sweet spot, that where we want to get to is that that should be more financially rewarding to the landowner or the developer or the business owner than the approach that is maximizing their private benefit but imposing all of these negative externalities on the public. So that's a sweet spot we're trying to find. And for forestry, The avenue has been through selling timber, selling conservation easement, selling carbon credits, and this other thing called due market tax credits, which in some ways is a reward for generating jobs in distressed areas. So it's both the social and the environmental benefits. So, let's think about, let's turn the conversation over to buildings for a moment. And there's a partial list of some of the many ecosystem services that buildings could and should provide. And we've talked about, I think, almost every one of those in the context of conversations today. And I sat next to Ruben last night, so food production is centrally a central part of it, including the goats on the roof and the food production system in the roof garden. So you can imagine buildings really being designed to produce all of these public benefits in a significant way. And so then you think about, well, how would you create an ecosystem service market around one of these things to compel greater production, if we all agree that buildings could and should be producing these? I mean, we're in this audience where everybody actually thinks that Ruben's vision is right on. But at the same time that we know that even LEED, which is such a partial solution to the challenge we're facing, is only, I can't remember, that it wasn't even a speck on the chart of the buildings in the presentation last night in terms of the percentage of LEED buildings, in Canada. So how do we? So clearly, even though we agree that these are all great things that buildings can provide, we need new systems to compel their production. I think Kevin talked a lot about the different incentives that municipalities and cities can provide. But even better, what if we create market opportunities so where we're not limited by the public purse and by the public imagination, but where we can set goals together, what it is we want to achieve, and then let market players really deliver those ecosystem services at the level that we need. So, and why markets? In addition to the reasons that Kevin said, is that there's all these things we want from buildings, and some of them are a little bit some of those needs you have to balance. So, for example, you can't use your roof to both simultaneously produce green power, store water, create a roof garden, produce habitat all at the same time. And different buildings can respond better to different opportunities. My daughter is doing a survey of invertebrates on green roofs and is just finding these differences between one green roof and another based on location and height and orientation and diversity and soil type that really, some buildings lend themselves better, obviously, as you know, in terms of site orientation and solar and all the rest of it, to the production of one ecosystem service than another. So it's a perfect opportunity for creating a market structure where you would perhaps impose an obligation on all roofs, or on all buildings, but allow the market to sort out who's the most efficient provider of that service. And so I just made something up here. So let's say, for example, that you pass an ordinance that all buildings, in Ruben's role, they would provide 100% of habitat, but let's just say that this is a negotiated political solution, and all buildings are obligated to provide 20% of their footprint in these habitat classes, and we're trying to benefit songbird diversity, for example. And so you set sort of what that cap or floor is based on, what the need is of that ecosystem service provision. You figure out who the regulated entity is going to be, what size and what type of structure might make sense. And then you figure out who can provide that benefit on behalf of those building owners who have that obligation. It could be somebody who owns a parking lot. It could be another building owner. It could be anybody that has available land to produce habitat in the service area that you've designated. You don't have any allowances that are distributed in this particular case because you're creating a good, which is habitat. You're not trying to reduce a bad, as in the case of greenhouse gas emissions. You figure out what the service area is of the habitat you're providing based on, the biodiversity districts that might apply in your city or municipality. You figure out what the unit of trade is. Andrea went through the different habitat types for songbirds, for example, so you might have meadow and hedgerow and different types of habitat types that apply to a green roof environment. And, you have to figure out what a trading platform is for people to come together and transact in this newly created market of, square yards of different types of habitats for songbird and invertebrate biodiversity within a city, who the enforcing agency is and who the market shapers are. So this is the process that you would go through to try to establish a market mechanism to accomplish your objective. And so I'll leave you with that thought about the different types of ecosystem services that we desire in buildings and with this type of a structure to jumpstart the provision of those, and look forward to your questions. Thanks.